There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the XG Underperformance podcast, a podcast in which two fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Leeds United, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Elland Road. I'm John McKenzie, freelance writer and podcaster, and I'm joined by Jamie Kemp, football editor at Opta Sports. Jamie, how is it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Hanging in there, coming to terms with what happened at the weekend just about.
Yeah, we spent the last 5 minutes trying to G ourselves up to be positive to talk about Leeds United, so it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. This is, of course, the January review podcast. So, actually, I suppose the month starts off quite positively. I say quite positively because the positive results that we had consisted of a draw and a loss. But we'll go from there. So we started off the new year with a draw away at West Brom, and it felt as though that was the point at the end of our poor spell. Naively, it turns out at this point, but a 1-1 draw put us back top of the table, and it felt as though we had a few easy games coming up before we had our tough run. And now we've had those easy games and they haven't gone quite so well. We then had a FA Cup loss to Arsenal, which was a really positive first half, and then a little bit more disappointing in the second half. But it showed that we could compete at that level, which was nice. And it felt like a free hit, a game that didn't really have anything riding on it. We didn't have an extra game to slow us down. And that meant that we were going to have a bit of a break at some point in that easy run. And then afterwards, the disappointment of Sheffield Wednesday losing 2-0 with two late goals there after having probably done enough to win that game. QPR, similarly, a goal that probably should have been disallowed when Naki Wells handballed it into the net. And then the sort of one bright point, if you can call it that, because Leeds were 2-0 down within about 20 minutes against Millwall and came back in exciting fashion. But I think the story of the month is that it's just been frenetic. It's been polar opposites. It's been, oh, we're actually top of the league now. We can turn our form around and push on and actually everything's going to be okay, to, oh, you know, we still have the same old problems. We still haven't fixed any of those issues that we talk about all the time. So, yeah, it's January has felt a little bit backwards and forwards. What would you say about January, Jamie? How do we look at the end of January compared to the beginning of January? Has there been a big change, or is it really much of the same and we're just sort of lucky that other teams around us haven't kicked on?
The games where we've been stung has been a combination of back to our absolute worst in terms of underperforming XG numbers and not finishing chances that we create, combined with the fact that every shot the opposition has seems to be flying in at the moment. Man City are experiencing the same thing now, and they're not a terrible team. It's just you go through these runs when teams, whether it's through mistakes of our own or shots just flying in, it's hard to explain until you're out of the other side, really. But our last two games, Millwall, Wigan, we've performed really well in terms of creating chances and limiting opposition chances. Obviously, Wigan is very fresh in our minds at the moment, but I refuse to believe that a team that put up 4.14 XG against Millwall just a few days before is now a bad team. I should say that we still underperformed our XG in that Millwall game, which it just says everything, really. But yeah, I mean, numbers-wise, on paper, these performances don't look bad at all, really. We've created more chances than our opposition in every game apart from West Brom, which was pretty tight. So, although it does feel like alarm bells when you're sort of in the stadium watching them, especially on Saturday, I don't think it's quite panic time just yet.
You've mentioned Man City. Obviously, City had a sort of Leeds-y game at the weekend. It's funny because I went to the to New White Hart Lane to get away from Leeds. I was like, I'll go and watch an entertaining game of football in which there's a just result. And it felt as though I was watching exactly the same thing that I always watch with Leeds. But I wondered whether or not you thought that the players get impacted by this narrative that we're a team that create a lot and just don't finish, and whether or not that's playing into our problems, because we've had a lot of questions about underperformance of XG, and we'll talk about that later, I think. But how much do you think that the more pressure a team is under when they start underperforming XG, how much do you think that suddenly starts compounding itself and players think, you know, if we miss this, maybe it is a thing? And that's probably playing at the back of their minds.
Yeah, I think it's impossible not to when it's been so stark. We're actually, you know, you don't want to look at everything through underperforming XG and these numbers, but we are underperforming by almost twice as much as we were last season, and that felt drastic then. So when you see those figures and you see the amount of shots and all the attacking work that we do, the reward just remains so modest. And I think when we, especially when we play at home, if we can open the score within our first sort of 8 to 10 chances of the game, just the environment just becomes much not easier to play, but it allows the players a bit more expression and to not feel like they're shackled and they're stuck in this thing where the ball just won't go in the net. Like West Brom last season, that was a huge game. We score in the first minute and everything just flows from there. But especially in these past few games, Millwall, we're just giving up such a weak goal just to make life just harder than it already is in the Championship. Wigan again later in the week. And we're just, alongside this failure to convert chances, we have to stop conceding the first shot that we allow from the opposition, and we just can't be making life more difficult for ourselves than it needs to be.
Yeah, and I guess in that vein, we talk about not finishing, but looking back over the goals that we've given away, I think there is an explanation for why, for example, Kiko Kassier can concede such a high percentage of shots on target, if you consider the fact that Leeds do play in such a way that leaves them open. And we know this. We know that Leeds are vulnerable, for example, in the left-back area, just by dint of the way that we set up. But I do think that, and I've had a lot of friends who I've talked to and said, you know, how can it be the case that Kiko Kassier can concede 76% of chances on target over a 5-game spell? That's just wild. And their sort of gut response has always been, well, you know, that's a Bielsa team, that's what they're going to do. But if you actually look at those chances, I mean, the chance against Wigan, which albeit was in February, but that's a goal that has come from just a very low percentage chance, fluke off a corner. The Millwall games, obviously there's a penalty in there as well. The QPR game, I mean, that's not our fault that sort of goal goes in. The Sheffield Wednesday game turned on the fact that a goal went in from a very, very wide angle under very little pressure. And so I think the frustration for me sort of comes from the fact that if you think about why Leeds might be conceding goals, you can say, yeah, you know, we are going to probably concede higher quality chances by the way that we play. But we're not, with the goals that we're conceding aren't really higher quality chances. They're just, a lot of the time, either highly unusual outliers, or they're just sort of chances where you think, oh, come on, the keeper's got to do better there, or, oh, come on, don't jump in on that challenge and we'll be fine. So I wondered if you had any thoughts on that side of things. Is it simply the case that that sort of mental fragility isn't just operating at the level of the strikers, it's happening at the level of the defence as well?
Possibly, yeah. If you look back at the goals that we've conceded this past month, it's just... It just makes your eyes bleed. Just the fact that we're not conceding great chances either in terms of quantity or quality. So it just sometimes, as we mentioned before, the fact that this some performance is weighing on the players' minds. When you have to work so hard to construct and create these opportunities, so much off ball running, so much focus goes into when we try to score a goal, and then you see what the opposition have to do to score a goal against us. It must be so frustrating for the players. Obviously, it is for the fans, but it's really frustrating, and it feels like we always just come back to this, and it's just a never ending theme since Bielsa came in.
Yeah. At the other end of the field, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on the question of whether or not Jean-Kevin Augustin should have played at the weekend against Wigan. There seems to be this... Let me pose the question differently. If you were Marcelo Bielsa and you've got a player like Patrick Bamford in your team who's wildly underperforming his expected goals, what do you do? How do you solve that issue? Is it as simple as just bring in someone else and then drop Bamford to the bench? Or do you think it's a little bit more complex than that?
It is more complex than just pinning your hopes on Augustin and the hope that he's going to change everything. But in regards to the first point, I did think Augustin should have been on the bench on Saturday. Less so for the fact that he does look like a dangerous player who can finish and... gets his shots off quickly in the box. It was just more for the what it would do for the atmosphere, really. Just last 15, 20 minutes. You would hope that we wouldn't need an impact sub at home to Wigan, but that's how it ended up. I just felt like if, you know, we know what those days look like for Bamford when it's just not going to happen for him. And if Nketi was there, I'm sure he would have come on Saturday. But I just felt Wigan had defended, you know, relentlessly for majority of the game, and if we could have had that spark in the last 20 minutes, not even just from what Augustin could have done in the game, it's hard to say what he had in him, but I just feel like the crowd would have really lifted and we'd have put some serious pressure on Wigan that last 20 minutes.
I guess let's pose the counterfactual then, because Jean-Kevin came on for the 20th. Well, he played for the 23s from the start, played 45 minutes and basically chubbed his way around the pitch for 45 minutes. Say that Augustin had that same kind of performance against Wigan. Say he'd come on at half time and basically looked off the pace, a little bit overweight, and nothing special. Do you think that would have had a negative impact in the sense that you said that it could have had a positive impact just by dint of the fact that we'd brought on a new player? What extent do you think that the negative aspect could have come into play there?
I think the negative impact would have been, it would have almost felt like a free swing, just giving him 15 minutes at the end, I feel. If he'd have come on at half time, then it would have had much bigger implications. But I just felt, I know Bielsa he's so focused on the process and controlling everything that he can, but I do feel like it wouldn't be the end of the world just to roll the dice sometimes. And I felt like Saturday was an acceptable opportunity to do it.
So let's talk, I think we should, let's just talk briefly about each of the games. So West Brom 1-1, two goals from Semi Ajayi, one at each end. How did you feel about it? It's a long time ago now, so rack your brains, but it felt like a fairly competent performance from us, for me. It sort of started off, A lot of our games actually seem to start off quite underwhelmingly at the moment. I think I'd say in the first 10 minutes we look like we're struggling to build out from the back, and we take a little while getting into the game. And I would also say that we actually look probably stronger in second halves than first halves, whether or not that's because teams are creating game states where we're down and they're defending, I don't know. But how did you feel that the West Brom, given that against West Brom, those have been the two games where we've probably looked the most tetchy in terms of our flamboyant style. How did you come away from the West Brom game feeling?
It was definitely, the second half was quite impressive, I thought. The way we came back into it, especially after, again, conceding such a daft goal so early on, just making life harder for ourselves again. But I thought in the second half we really gathered a rhythm going forward, getting Costa and Harrison involved out wide, as well as the fact that Bamford came on at half time, and he did play well that game. And it felt like, well, maybe it was just wishful thinking, but you felt like possibly a passing of the torch with Nketiah going, Bamford coming on and changing the game, playing much better than Nketiah did. And you hoped that'd be the point where it was like, yeah, I'm the real number nine now. I've shown that I can offer more than Nketiah does in terms of overall play, and I've influenced the goal as well, got us into a game against a big rival. So I was quite happy with the performance that day, to be honest, especially after such a bad start.
And then obviously on to the Arsenal game, which was a sort of really nice day out for us. It was a really good performance, sort of put us on the map a little bit, made us look competent. We talked about this quite a bit in the last episode, so I don't think there's any need to really go through the Arsenal game. But I guess my question is, how do you go from the Arsenal game then to the Sheffield Wednesday game? It feels as though we've given a really good account of ourselves. We've really shown off what we can do when the pressure's off. And then you come into the Sheffield Wednesday game where you, like we said, give away a really cheap goal late on in the game. A sort of failure by Dallas to deal with the ball under very little pressure. And then obviously the Murphy goal coming from a situation where you would 9 times out of 10 expect either the keeper or the defender to deal with it. Again, and I know it feels as though we're sort of banging on the same old drum here, but I guess my question is, like, how can a team go from being so competent, so sort of smart looking, so obviously tactically drilled, and then end up producing a result like that? Is it simply the case that, I mean, it obviously is just the case that we just have an inability to finish chances, but I struggle to get my head around the fact that the team can look so different 1 week to the next week.
Yeah, on top of the things you mentioned, there's obviously a big stylistic element playing away at Arsenal against a team who, under Arteta, they're actively looking to get on the ball and control the game that way, versus Gary Monk away from home, 10 men behind the ball, two lines of four, or I think they played 4-3-3 that day, actually. So, line of five midfielders, which, you know, as a good team, it's a consequence that a lot of sides will come to Ellen Road and sit back and just close space and make it difficult for you to build up real momentum and pace in your attacks, which was apparent on Saturday as well. But again, against Wednesday, we continue the theme of conceding a ridiculous first goal, which sentenced the game, really. Obviously, Nui scored after, but that was just, we'd sort of zoned out by then, feeling a bit sorry for ourselves. Yeah, it's just the difference in the game was a shot from an angle that shouldn't be scored, and then we go away with no points, and then an extra load of sort of baggage that we take into coming games, and we don't want to be building more pressure and you know, inviting you know, consequences onto future performances, because we cannot be conceding such daft goals when we have to work so hard to score our own at the other end.
I wonder whether or not you think that, I mean, it feels to me as though we have almost created a team that will be brilliant in the Premier League within reason, given the assets that we have. But the problem is that we're going to struggle in the league that we're in to get out of it, simply because there is an expectation that, and if you look at the underlying numbers, it's something that you see with City, like Leeds are so far and away the most competent team in terms of possession, in terms of creating incisive attacks, in terms of dominating games. Almost every metric that you would want to prioritise as an attacking side, we're hands and away the best at it. And that means that, and this is another question that we get a lot actually on the Twitter account, is why don't we try and sit deep against teams for a change? But that's kind of not how it works, really. You can't have two teams sitting deep against themselves, and teams come out against Leeds expecting to be dominated, expecting to be caused all kinds of problems. And so I think part of the frustration that we feel comes from the fact that the opposition are just coming out to see what they can get. So every game feels like a complete shithouse, basically, because that's what teams are coming to do. The best chance of getting a result against Leeds is to sit deep and just hope you grab something. And the fact that so many teams have managed to do that is simply like outlier statistics, but that's also the best way that teams can perform against us. So when we do lose, in the occasions we do lose, it feels even more frustrating, because it's just such low odds chances that these teams would do that. So yeah, that was my original question. To what extent do you think Marcelo Bielsa has built a team that is too competent for this division?
It is actually something I've thought about before as well. Because stylistically, we hit all the same parameters as a team like Manchester City will do in relation to their competition. So the dominance of possession, the dominance over shots and creating chances. But sometimes it feels like when we're, especially when we're playing at home, we're almost guaranteed possession, and it's up to us just to break down the opposition. But I feel like, in terms of relating it to a Premier League side who replicate that in a division above, it just feels like they can rely on the individual ability of their players a bit more than we can. So if, say for example, Manchester City at home to Palace, the difference in quality between someone like Mahrez and his opposite number at fullback, Patrick Van Aanholt, is much bigger than, say for example, Jack Harrison and Nathan Byrne on Saturday. It feels like those margins are just a bit bigger, and it makes it a bit easier for them to find solutions that aren't all rooted in, you know, attacking structure.
Yeah, and we put out a thing actually on our channel again this week, just talking a little bit about transition, because there's this big thing amongst fans, which is, oh, you know, we look ponderous in defensive attacking transitions, and I just threw down a few ideas for why that might be the case, and some of the sort of urban myths about transition, that transitioning at speed is always a good thing. And obviously one of those things is that, you know, if you're playing against teams who are sitting deeper, you can't transition quickly, because you can't get in. There's no space in behind to get into. You've already, the opposition are always already a little bit more compact. And it's just so much harder to break down a team that are compact, because they're protecting less space relatively, and it's quite easy to drill a team well enough that they can sit in about two banks of four or a bank of four or five, and stop the opposition. When you take into account, as you've said, the discrepancies in quality between players like Mahrez at City and his opposite. Opposite number at fullback for the opposition. They've also got players like Bernardo Silva just sitting on the bench that they can bring on, who's just again, like you say, a creative individual who will find solutions individually rather than as a team. And Leeds just don't really have that. They don't have the ability to bring on a player who is going to create an event or a situation out of nowhere. We have Pablo Hernandez, he's great. Tyler Roberts is good in those situations. But again, the discrepancy in quality between having Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, Bernardo Silva, even Phil Foden as their low down choice. These are all players who can create quality chances out of nowhere in tight spaces. We don't have that. And the reason why Leeds do so well is because they can manipulate space better than any other team in the league. But Bielsa's system is all about rotations, interchanges, pulling teams apart. And as soon as teams just sit deep, it becomes very, very hard to do that. And so the reason why teams sit deep against Leeds at the moment is because they know that they're nullifying one of the biggest upsides to a Bielsa team. So I guess there's all kinds of frustrations that we have, which sort of boil down to why don't we just score? And we do create enough chances to score, which is why a lot of this discussion always ends up being a little bit moot, because we're just sort of talking about how do we create even more chances that we can then go on and miss. I think the frustration there is that you just kind of always having to think, right, how can we get even more upside? How can we get even more upside? And I just think that, one, there's an inability in some of the fan base to accept that actually what we do is impressive anyway, to create the chances that we do when teams sit deeper against us. But also, you know, that's just what happens when the quality in your squad is less than the quality of squads who usually play the way that Bielsa play. And so it gives us a false sense of what is and isn't possible. Yeah, of course Man City are going to be able to do things like that because they've got the players that they've got. When it comes to Leeds, it's not quite so simple as well. Can't they just break down this low block easily? But that's becoming a little bit more of a rant for me.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we should move on to QPR. Again, like, what do you say about this game? A goal that changed the game and wasn't particularly deserved. A poor refereeing performance, really. I don't really like talking about referees, but it sort of came down to that. And a similar sort of turn of events that we had when we played against Fulham away from home. It being that sort of poor. Do we play Fulham away? Was it away? Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah. But a similar thing where you give away a penalty, a soft penalty, and suddenly the game state changes. The opposition team, like you said, when Leeds go up, they can play a certain way. When oppositions go up, they can play a certain way, and it's just hard to break teams down like that. Have you got any other thoughts about the QPR game?
You know, Bielsa won't make a big deal out of it, but you can't mention that game without mentioning the referee. It's happened to us, I think, 3 times in London this season now, where we've essentially started a game 1-0 down because of a poor refereeing decision, which changes everything dramatically. Obviously, if you criticise the ref and we pin it all on him, it's seen as an excuse, but it's a massive factor in how the game happens. Yeah, in the second half, it's just, you can't believe that we didn't score. You throw in a penalty as well as, from the moment the second half kicked off for about 20 minutes, they just didn't get out of their half and we were just coming forward in waves. And we just couldn't get that goal. If Bamford scores, that game could go 1,000 different ways from there and we might even end up winning it.
Yeah, and I think we would both hasten to add that we don't think that there's a refereeing conspiracy against Leeds. I think we just generally think that the standard of refereeing in the Championship is pretty poor all round, and it's sort of come back to bite us on the arse a few times too many this season. And then I guess the high point of the month of January was the Millwall game. Which I think was big for a lot of us because we went from a situation where we at half time when we were saying, you know what, we're not going to get promoted this season, it's just not going to happen, to ending the day with everyone else sort of performing badly and us winning and sitting on the top of the league again and feeling like we'd sort of lucked out a bit. Again, one of the most impressive halves of football under Bielsa in that second half against Millwall. I don't know whether or not we've dominated a team to quite that extent that we did in that, particularly in the first 20-30 minutes of that half. And it just sort of looked, I mean, the jokes about Leeds training with mannequins and Millwall looking like they were mannequins came out. But I think that was fair. I don't think I've ever seen a team look so devoid of ideas against us. And then interestingly, I thought Millwall looked a lot better when they were losing again. What are your thoughts on the Millwall game? It was nice to see a team. It was nice to see us turning over a deficit for once, because I don't think I feel like we're ever going to overturn a deficit when we go down. And that certainly happened again against Wigan. But against Millwall, I, at 2-0 down, I said, there's just no hope here. So it was quite nice to see that. But any other takeaways from the Millwall game?
Yeah, at half time, I was pretty resigned to the fact we were losing that game, because I just thought to overcome two goals against a team that were, They were working so hard and they were so invested in protecting the lead, with a manager who's good at instilling that style of play. I thought we just lost that game, but yeah, the second half was immense, really. And when you think that we've produced that second half against Millwall, and then followed up with the Wigan game a few days later, it's just unbelievable highs and lows of this season. All of that just within a week, so it's just, it's ridiculous. Yep. But yeah, the Millwall game, just to mention the XG figures, we've accumulated over four expected goals in that game without a penalty, which is, you know, there aren't many teams in English league football who can, you know, light up attacking performances like that.
Manchester City would.
yeah, exactly. And we're both stuck in a rut of creating everything, scoring nothing, allowing nothing and conceding everything. So, we saw the potential of this team, and then it's Achilles' heel within a matter of days.
Yeah, right. I don't want to keep banging on about this, but we have got a question about XG from Jason Middleton. So he says, we keep hearing just how poorly Bamford is performing his XG. I'd like to hear the same stat across the team for everyone who's had a suitable minimum amount of shots. A comparison to their XG performance last season would also be of interest. Has anyone improved? And I know you've done a little bit of number crunching on this. So what did you find out?
Yes. So basically, just to sum up generally, there's no one in our squad this season that is overperforming their expected goals value by even one. I think it's Luke Ayling overperforming his goals the most by, it's a decimal number, which is pretty concerning. It's just everything is rooted in underperformance, and there's really no one that you can absolve of blame for whether it's poor finishing or just being unlucky, really. But he mentioned Bamford in that, and I think both things are true when you say that we can't just look at Bamford's finishing as the overall reason for Leeds not finishing our chances well enough. But the fact is, Bamford's XG number of 20.6 is over a third of our team's overall total. So he's not only getting the lion's share of these chances, they're also the highest quality chances in our squad. I looked across the league in terms of shot quality. Players who've attempted at least 50 shots this season, he ranks fourth out of 36 players for the quality of his average chance. There's only Lewis Graben, James Collins and Ollie Watkins ahead of him. So these are not bad chances that he's getting. It's a very steady flow of good quality chances. He's getting more than anyone else, and the quality of them are higher than players like Mitrovic and Other strikers that are doing well in this league, Bowen, Carlin Grant. There's a whole raft of players who are performing well in Championship this season that don't get the supply that he does. So
I presume that he's got the highest XG figure this season.
Just in terms of total, yeah.
Yeah.
Two more than Mitrovic, roughly.
Right, okay. In terms of other players, Jack Harrison is presumably up there.
Harrison, yeah. He's our next biggest source in terms of overall XG, although it is roughly 12 lower than Bamford, which is quite a drop-off.
What's his figure then?
Harrison is 8.1. He's scored 5, so...
Okay, so he's running 3 below, which is quite considerable, I think, for a wide player.
Especially when you consider with teams like Brentford, whose front three are just lights out almost every game, it seems. We're doing a lot of heavy lifting through Bamford in terms of the overall production, but that's not happening, and neither is a real supporting cast, to be honest, which is a bit concerning and something that you feel like we're just going to have to fight against to get over the line.
I was talking to someone who's fairly well-connected at Brentford, and he was telling me that in their scouting department, they've built an XG model which takes into account the sort of quality of contact on the ball and speed of shot, basically. And one thing I've noticed since I was told this is just quite how good all of the Brentford players are, one, at ball striking, and two, how quickly they get their shots away. I wondered whether or not something like that, I mean, we know that Bamford doesn't particularly connect with the ball well. In fact, that's something that you could generally say of the Leeds team this season. There's been a lot of fluffed shots this season. I wondered if you thought there might be anything in that, whether or not the chances that we create actually would require someone like Benrahma or Ollie Watkins or Brian Mbeumo to be able to take them and make them as convincing chances as they appear on shot maps.
It would be interesting to see it replicated for this Leeds team, because you do get the feeling that our results would be pretty poor, especially in relation to a team like Brentford. But I think we had a question, or somebody else mentioned on Twitter about Harrison and Costa swapping wings possibly, but I do feel like the fact that Brentford have two wide players that both cut in and play sort of more as an inside forward than a traditional winger, that just allows them better shooting opportunities, I think. So that could be a possibility.
And obviously Ollie Watkins is a wide player as well by trade, which I think kind of affects things, because then there isn't quite the feeling that, I mean, this is just anecdotal, but there may not be quite the feeling that they have to rely on him as a goal scorer, because he's sort of in that position out of necessity. And so I think their front three is a little bit more fluid, whereas I think there's definitely a sense amongst the fan base at Leeds that Bamford is in the team to get goals. And so there's that sort of onus is placed on his shoulders, that when the team don't particularly perform well in terms of goal scoring, chance conversion, then he's the main blame for that. But anyway, I think that's the end of a fairly miserable episode. In terms of February, we've got a pretty tough run of games coming up. We're playing 4th, 5th and 6th in the next three games. Do you think that there's a chance that Leeds might come out on top in those games, in the sense that we've talked about, that Leeds actually are probably better off playing teams who are going to try and create against them? And how do you sort of envisage that we'll be at the end of February?
Yeah, there's a feeling that after playing these sides that sit back against us, that Brentford might almost be a good thing. But we'll find out soon enough. Maybe we're really wrong about that, because our record at Brentford is awful. But
and they're also scoring about 5 goals a game at the moment, which is a little bit unnerving.
Yeah, you just think. I've always felt we're a better side against teams that want to not go toe to toe, but will not be so sort of passive in their play. and perhaps allow us some more opportunities to counter, because we have been on the opportunities that we've had from counter attacks this season. When it's been possible, we've been really productive. I think we've scored about 5 or 6 counter attack goals this season. Well, defined by Opta anyway, which is right up there, possibly top or joint top with Hull, I think. So maybe that's a side that we can bring in against Brentford, but we'll have to see. Although saying that, once we've got Brentford out of the way, then we're right back into it with Forest, because they're possibly the biggest culprits in the league for just sitting back and soaking up pressure. Even when they play at home against likes of Luton, I think they allowed Luton to have more of the ball. So against us, that's going to be the classic Bielsa 70% possession game, and you just hope that we can defend well enough to not concede, which which is the big problem in these games, because when teams sit off, they relinquish that attacking production because they're far from goal. But we've been trying to break down teams that have come to do that while also conceding from stupid chances, which is just the absolute worst formula against those sides. So you just like to see us be a bit more competent defensively and stop giving away these daft goals from situations that don't really merit goals. I think if we can do that, we'll be competent across all these games.
Which of those two teams would you rather beat? Or is it just a case of, as long as we win one of those games, we're probably looking in quite good shape?
If you wanted to pick a game to win, you'd probably pick the second one, because then we can take a victory into Bristol and maybe gather some momentum again, as opposed to keep winning and losing. But I don't think it matters a huge deal which sides. I'd just like to see the performances there, mostly in these games. I just want to see us get back to a really solid level in terms of defending, mostly, because it feels like we're always going to be fighting against the tide with this finishing issue, unless Augustin comes in and just scores with everything he touches. So it's just that defensive side that I'd like to see in these next 3 games.
I think that brings us to the end of this podcast, and sorry that it was such a miserable affair. Hopefully we found some positives, some nuggets of gold in amongst the general pile of shit that we've had to put up with this month. But Jamie, thank you very much for coming on. For those who enjoy Jamie's stuff, you can find it over at Jamie M Kemp, and also at LUFC blog _. And obviously, if you like our stuff, head over to at All Stats Aren't We. That's where most of our stuff is from. If you really like our stuff, we do have bonus content, which is out on Patreon, which is there's various tiers that you can subscribe to. And don't forget that we have a radio show out on Love Sport Radio every Friday night between 8 and 9. And that is now available on national radio. Jamie, thanks very much. Enjoy the month, and let's hope that we have a bit more of a positive review of February in a month's time.
No worries. Cheers, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.